You're listening to The Unseen Cinema with Shawnee Blue and Sandy Black, who you just heard talking about jazz and the new Polish movie, Cold War. Black and Blue are joined by the Pasadena Pirate and by producer Jack Smith. In this episode, they will talk about Cold War, Under the Skin starring Scarlett Johansson, bad movies about good boats, and the Maori masterpiece, Whale Rider. While drinking Pete Fleischhacker's homebrew ale, this is The Unseen Cinema, the podcast about the movies you should be seeing, rather than the dreck out of Hollywood.
Goodbye, Liz. Take it easy. We've just been visited by a Colombian. We're going to talk about Colombian cinema. Have you seen any good Colombian movies recently?
Sorry.
Okay, that was Liz. And part two, and I am opening up the beer from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Goes well with chocolate wine.
Yeah, probably with the chocolate
wine. Not too much for me.
It'll make a lot better. Yeah, I'm just you. I'm just a sip.
Tiny
here's yours.
Sippy whips.
Yeah, there you go. There's a
there's
little sip whip.
Red now.
And a sip for you, too.
Yes.
There, Jack. Here we go. All right.
Bob, wait.
And for the pirate, here's your grog. Here's your glass of ale. Do you know that those sailors, when they went out, they had a legal right to a certain amount of rum?
Of course. There would be mutiny if they didn't have it.
So, to avoid a mutiny on this show, we've arranged so the pirate can have some beer.
Cheers,
from...
my darlings.
Oh, yeah.
Cheers, Jack.
There we go.
Cheerios.
Yeah.
Cheers,
yeah.
Pirate.
Okay, from St. Paul, Minnesota. There we go. Hey, yours has got a big head. Do you want to trade?
That's what she said.
No, I'll just
Okay, so here we go. This beer is called Welfare State.
Damn.
In fact, it's going to be called welfarestate.tv. So
wow, that's
a beer that's from St. Paul.
Good.
He made it in his bathtub.
Damn.
Wait.
Ah. Everywhere we went in St. Paul and in Minneapolis, I went to these high-end breweries. I kept on asking for the yellowest beer. And Peter was like, oh, my God, next time I come here, they're going to be like, where's your yellow friend? Because they all have these names like Todd the Axe and all this, like, pretentious, you know, sort of they can't just call it. It's just not beer. What do you think? Tastes like beer?
Hairs on my chest, beer! That's what it tastes like.
So, before the break, or during the break, we had a discussion with the pirate. I made the mistake of mentioning a movie...
About a boat.
All is Lost with Robert Redford as being the sort of movie that you would hear on a if you were on a train or in an airplane without, because there's no talking in it. And she immediately responded with invective.
So let's find out
from her if she...
Why is it a no?
Because if you were a real sailor, these people that wrote this movie obviously have never been on a boat, because the guy would never, ever go under those conditions without a radio. And you don't fucking go under, you don't go downstairs when there's a storm happening and you have all your sails out.
Yeah.
No fucking idiot would go out and you know there's a storm coming. And then he has all his sails out and what does he do? He goes downstairs to have a shave. Like, come on. How fucking irresponsible. Like, at the end I was like, you deserve to die, man. You are an idiot. You would never, ever go out. So maybe that, but, you know, they didn't even go into his backstory, like, if he was actually, what was, so you see a little bit, like, okay, he had a family, maybe he was divorced, and he just didn't care anymore, he wanted to kill himself, so right. He just decided to go on a boat with nothing, or he didn't have experience, he bought a boat, he didn't know what he was doing, so he just goes, he had a life crisis, that's what I thought. A life crisis back home, he decides, okay, let's just get a boat and let's isolate myself and let's go out. And he didn't know anything, and then the shit got real. And then, yeah, he decided, like, no, I actually want to live, but I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. So, yeah, that was technically, like, every 5 seconds, I was like, no, you would never do that, you would never do that, you would never do that. So...
Now, have you seen a movie where every 5 seconds you were thinking, man, they got it right?
Well, Master and Commander was actually really, really good. The books as well, I've read all the books. They're all really good. And the movie did a good job. I think Peter Weir is the director. It was a very underrated movie, even though I hate Russell Crowe. Mm-hmm. I think I can't stand him. even in this character, I
you can tell he's a douche.
He is a douche, but in the books, the character also is a bit like, I can kind of see it. He has kind of that spirit, that character. Yeah, Jack Aubrey and the other one, Stephen Maturin, who is played mm-hmm. by that other actor. What is his name? He's married to Jennifer Connelly, that actor. Can't remember. So he got kind of the essence of the character, but I still... Russell Crowe, I can't stand him.
Douchiness.
Yeah, but that character kind of needed that douchebag aspect to it. But that's the thing. He didn't have the charm. The character in the book had this charm. Like, yeah, right. He could be a bit, like, swagger, blah, 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 but he had a charm to him. And this...
Was he a sociopath in the book? Like,
No. But it's his character was like a foil to this other character. So the other's the doctor. He's very serious. He's like the Charles Darwin sort of natural. And then this Russell Crowe character, he's like the womanizing...
Bon vivant.
Yeah, like what you think of as like the typical pirate, even though he's not a pirate, he's a privateer. So he's a pirate, but paid.
I'm surprised because I thought that movie was a sort of a homoerotic.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's definitely, definitely. And during those time periods, hell yeah. I mean, a hole is a hole. Like you're
cabin fever,
you know, like. Yeah, definitely.
So Paul Bettany.
Paul Bettany, yeah.
I didn't know he was married to Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah.
She's been in some bad movies, too. She's been in some very good movies as well.
She's had, I hope, some good work done to her face.
Oh, she's gorgeous. Oh, my God. Girl crush on her in that movie, The Labyrinth. Oh, my God. Such a girl crush on her. And David Bowie, of course. But, yeah, Jennifer Connelly, her eyes, just, wow. Gorgeous.
That's where we'll get the ratings with this podcast if we talk about girl crushes on Jennifer Connelly. Sure, and Rachel Weisz is probably another one that you had some girl crushes on.
Not as much.
That's interesting. No.
She sort of looks like she's a female.
She looks like she wants to be on top, and I have a feeling this pirate wants to be on top.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Oh, yeah, there'd be some bitch.
We need to get back to the subject here, which is boats. Right. Movies on boats. Can you recommend a movie about...
Once more you open the door, and you see it, I can go on.
There was definitely space on that painting for both of them, no?
Yeah.
She was just selfish. Like, come on. Like,
well, I can say that I saw a tremendous TV series on Shackleton. It's the Kenneth Branagh three-part, mm-hmm. It might even have been four-part. I think you may have watched that with Irwin. Did you remember that about the explorer trying to get to the South Pole? And this ship sinks and he ends up on a 800-mile boat journey to...
I don't think I got through it. I don't know what happened.
Well, that's a bad sign. So it didn't capture you.
I don't remember what happened.
Yeah. Well, do we remember this movie? My father always hoped that I would grow up to write a movie like this called The Poseidon Adventure.
No.
You never saw that one? About the big cruise ship that turns upside down with Gene Hackman these different people. Yeah. Written by Paul Gallico, a failed sports writer. I guess he did okay in Hollywood. But still, so we're waiting to find out from you. Master and Commander, okay. Any other boat movies?
There's a load of good documentaries. Deep Water is very good. It's about this British sailor who signs up to do the Whitbread round the world race. I think his name is Cromwell, I believe. And it's just the story about, you know, when you're isolated and you have so much pressure to succeed and that you will do anything to, you know, fight for your family. And, you know, a lot of people bet a lot of money on this guy to go win around the world. And then you find out what happens when all this pressure and all of this is pushed on you and you're isolated in the middle of the ocean and all your thought process becomes different, and it's a very good character study of this guy and how society and pressure pushes someone to do things that maybe they wouldn't have done if they weren't in an isolated situation. But there's a bunch of other sailing documentaries that are really good. I haven't seen The Dove, but I've read the book about that. I think he was, 16-year-old kid?
Robin
Lee Graham.
Mm-hmm.
But I read the book. The book was pretty well written, but I couldn't get over the fact that he wouldn't have done it if his dad hadn't paid for his boat. He didn't work for it. So I was just lost respect for him. I mean, yeah, he's 16. He's doing it on his own, great, without help from his parents, but you didn't work hard for it. Like, you didn't sacrifice. I mean, yeah, he did after he bought the boat, but getting to that part, he had a lot of help along the way. So I was like, yeah, it's just another rich white kid from California who got his dad to buy him a boat, and then he could do all the stuff that he did, but...
Did he die?
No, actually.
Oh, damn.
he actually... Actually, it's strange. He went around the world. He did that whole National Geographic thing. And then he moved to, I think it was Montana or Wyoming, with a girl that he met in somewhere in the Pacific. But she's American, too.
Hmm.
And then they had a homestead. But then they got super religious and very, yeah, different.
Doesn't he pop up every now and then on press conferences and
probably
when
yeah.
other people sort of go long voyages? There's a young woman who recently failed to become the youngest mm-hmm. around the world. She had to be rescued.
Yeah.
At first it looked really bad. Then everybody found out the information. She'd actually done a very good job. And mm-hmm. I guess she'd gotten physically ill or something like that. And so they had to rescue her. And I think he popped up in the news and was sort of, you know, he's sort of like everybody's good luck charm. But he sort of reminds me a little bit of Jean-Claude Killy, you know, in the sense that, you know, Jean-Claude Killy at 20 years old, you know, won 4 gold medals at the Olympics and then never did anything again with the rest mm-hmm. of his life. And so you have to wonder, I always think of this kid as Christopher Robin. I know that's not his name, but he has this sort of magical sort of, yes, he went on the boat and almost got, you know, run down by a big ocean liner. I remember that very dramatically in the National Geographic. But then they sort of go away, and like you say, it's a sort of a one-trick pony his dad gave him. And also this young woman that didn't complete her trip. It's the same thing. Her dad sort of pushed her into it and got her a boat, and mm-hmm. they traveled together on boats and stuff like that. And let's talk about another movie that I think we've all seen that does not involve boats, but has a sort of a young girl culture, and there's not even a maritime aspect to it, but it might as well be because it's many seas away. The Whale Rider. Did you see Whale Rider?
I did, but it...
So long ago you can't remember?
I'm wondering if I did or didn't. I'm not sure. The little girl?
Yeah, the girl that she wanted to do the warrior dances and performances, and her grandfather wouldn't watch her in the theater because, to me, The Whale Rider is sort of the perfect kind of unknown movie because it was a hit when it came out. But you had to be a certain age, really, to have been exposed to the movie. And now nobody would watch a movie like The Whale Rider. It's just not, it's old, it's gone by. You would almost come across it by accident. And it's a tremendous movie. It's a very interesting movie that allows you to live among the Maori for a couple of hours and to see how hierarchical and patriarchal the society is. And this young woman is dynamite. And the people that made The Whale Rider, the person that wrote or directed The Whale Rider, wrote a novel about older Maori women and their attitude towards skin color and how women of a certain skin color have more power or more better social standing and are therefore more valuable in their community than ones that are very dark. And I just saw a review or something about this movie coming out now, and I was surprised to see that it was connected to The Whale Rider, which was a kid's movie. Whale Rider was for 11-year-old girls. That was the sort of the target audience, and it did a fantastic job of hitting it. And I found it magical. I was just completely transported into this world of mythology and everything. But you've seen the movie as well. We had a brief discussion about it. How did it impact you? Do you remember how old you were when you saw it? Were you an 11-year-old girl by any chance?
When was it made, by the way? I don't remember. Yeah, it was definitely...
I think it might have been 1995.
2002.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was 11 years old.
Wow. Well, look at that. Okay. How funny. Yeah, and that was without any... Yeah, so you were the perfect audience for Whale Rider. And did you see Whale Rider in a theater with other kids?
No. How did I see it? I think they showed it at school.
Oh, neat.
Which is kind of weird because I went to a Catholic school and they banned a lot of... They banned Harry Potter and stuff like that. And then they showed this... I think they showed this film in one of the classes.
I wonder why they banned Harry Potter.
Oh, because they
stupid.
Yeah, witches, that's against the Bible's teachings and all of that.
Oh, there are witches in Harry Potter?
Yeah, witches and wizards. So they locked it up in the library with all the banned books. And you'd have to have, like, 3 teachers' permissions to read any of those. So, of course, everyone read them. The Da Vinci Code was another one that was banned. So we all read it in religion class.
And so what did you think when you saw Whale Rider as an 11-year-old?
If I were to see it now, it would be different. Because, you know, when you're 11, you're just like, oh, okay, this is kind of cool. And you're not... I wasn't really tuned in anyway. It was just like kind of like escaping into that character. And, I feel like I kind of saw a little bit of myself in her. Just, you know, seeing a woman of color in that lead role and sort of going against all of that expectation that society or that... you know, the patriarchy has on a young female. But that's what I'm saying now. It's obviously when I was 11, I probably didn't think about it like that. Mm. Just like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then go out and play or whatever.
Now, what's extraordinary about that movie is that the lead actress was nominated for Best Actor. I think she might have been 11, 12, 13 years old when the movie was made. And that does not happen very often. And there was a scene in that movie when she was on stage and realized her grandfather wasn't coming that was very, very touching, that she was really upset and everything. But I remember, you know, people celebrate Scarlett Johansson because she can do this big acting in a tiny little movement. I remember that movie where something had happened. I think it was in the rehearsals, and either she'd done something wrong or she was being rebuked or something like that. And I'll never forget the way she looked away from the person that was giving her a hard time, and she was scratching at the stick that she was dancing with, this sort of sacred stick or something. She was just scratching at it with her fingernail. It was just this tiny little scene, and I remember thinking, like, for a young person to do that is extraordinary acting, because generally when you see somebody, you know, under puberty anyway, they give it away a little bit by just, there's a wooden aspect of it that isn't completely natural, and this was such a natural move that couldn't have been coached, and yet the girl disappeared. I don't know. She may be in this new movie.
She's on Game of Thrones.
What's that? Huh?
She's on Game of Thrones.
Is she?
She does, yeah.
Oh, my
gosh.
Who
is she?
Keisha Castle Hughes? Is that her name?
Which one?
Keisha Castle
play?
Hughes, yeah, yeah.
She's in Game of Thrones.
But what does she play in?
She's in the Dorne Kingdom. She's a sand snake.
Have you seen Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Jack, have you seen Game of Thrones? Nope. I have not seen Game of Thrones, and you've seen every bit of it.
Of
and
course.
You've seen Game of Thrones. Okay, so, so the Whale Rider movie was very good, I think, for a young person, sort of, you know, just tremendous acting to be really good and be really convincing, to be really somebody that you couldn't, you know. And what I liked about The Whale Rider is that many years later, when Hannah came out, And the young actress who was in Hannah, whose name is escaping me right now.
Saoirse Ronan.
Yeah, Saoirse Ronan. You know, she's gold. Everything she's doing right now is gold. And which sort of makes sense because she was such a powerful presence in that Hannah movie. I was just like, man, this is my sort of, you know, as a male who likes to look at females.
BTW, Sean does female assassins.
Yes, that's true too. Yes, that's my bailiwick. Yep. Yeah, I'll cop to that. That is my that's my area of expertise or area of fantasy anyway. So I loved Hannah, but I have to keep in mind that any movie with extreme violence is essentially fantasy and not real. Even though I loved the White Helmets movie about the guys in Aleppo who are going around cleaning up after dead people.
I disagree.
Ah.
I mean, have you seen City of God?
Yes.
Sadashi Deus.
Fantastic.
That's extreme violence.
Yes.
And it happens.
Yes.
I lived in a slum in Rio. It's fucking real.
Yeah.
It's real. That violence, those kids, those family, they go through it every day. There's a place in Rio called Crackland, and it's what you imagine a place like that's called.
But
it's
many tough. Movies use that sort of violence in situations where the violence itself is not real, like all Scandinavian movies where there's eight people that get killed a year, and there's all these Scandinavian mystery murder, you know, all this kind of stuff. City of God is real, that to go in the favela, or not the favela, but into that section of the favela that is lawless. That part to me is real, and I could think of other places that I've been to. Nicaragua, the whole eastern part of Nicaragua, there is no law, and it's all boat, canoe, sort of. There's parts of the Everglades that at the turn of the century were lawless. There was no sheriff, there was nobody to look after anything. We have a friend of ours who grew up in with a grandfather who was just basically an insane man on a small island, part of Maine, where the closest cop was 35 miles away. And this guy did stuff that is just unbelievable, unspeakable. So yes, violence, I think, is a part of cinema that is very, very important because it gives us an idea of how other people live and what they're subjected to. But a lot of white people's violence is gratuitous. And by white people's violence, I mean Clint Eastwood and Martin Scorsese and the kind of shit that they brought to cinema in the 1970s, which is just, you know, I know what you're thinking, punk, do I have one bullet left or do I have two? Come on. A lot of this stuff is really sort of fake.
Say hello to my little friend.
So what I liked about Whale Rider versus Hannah, where it was easy to be bowled over by Hannah because she was beating up guys, essentially, kicking them in the crotch and throwing them against the wall. I loved it.
Sounds like my relationship history.
I love that compared to, you know, other movies that where it's basically white guy on white guy sort of violence, the Chuck Norris, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone kind of paradigm, which I just don't buy at all. But then, you know, Whale Rider didn't have that. There was no violence. There was no gunshot. No one got stabbed. No one got hit over the head or anything like that. And yet it seemed very dangerous at parts to this girl, and she managed to convey that. And I thought that that was really, really well done. And another movie, the American equivalent to Whale Rider, to me, would have been our friend Jennifer Lawrence's first movie. I think she's made a lot of dog movies since then. But the movie Winter's Bone in the Ozarks was a tremendous movie. And it was a young girl trying to navigate the world of, like, I mean, Mad Men, and she had a certain amount of time to do it. I don't really remember violence happening, but the threat of violence was always there. It involved a murder and everything like that. Very believable and very shocking movie, and it sort of introduced us to Jennifer Lawrence. She came out of nowhere, and she was a star. So, Saoirse, how do you pronounce her name? Saoirse Ronan?
Mm-hmm.
Is that
sounds
how
you think? About right.
Yeah, it sounds about right, yeah. Now she is fantastic in the movies. She's, you know, the Lady Bird, you know, tremendous. And wasn't she in the Brooklyn movie as well? Wasn't that what it was called, Brooklyn? I think she was. She was an Irish immigrant that comes to Brooklyn. Didn't we see that movie, Brooklyn? Do you remember that? She, a young girl comes to New York and lives in a rooming house with other girls. And makes her way and meets a young Italian boy, and they
sort of decide
they have a family and stuff like that. So I can see where she would come out and be a star from a delivery vehicle like that. I mean, Hannah is what, and now I've just saw some ads for the new Hannah, which is a television show on TV, and I was like, oh, well, how could they do this? You know, what a disappointment this is. But I remember thinking that this was, you know, a very interesting character. Last night I watched a Latvian movie called Raya, about very similar sort of circumstance. 17-year-old who's got a younger brother she's got to look after, and her whole social structure around her is breaking down, and she has a chance to get out of Latvia by winning a English speaking or English grammar, English writing competition, and her relationship with her school teacher and stuff. And so these movies that are big ideas in small spaces, I like to think of them when you're really trying to tackle something large, but you're doing it in a small setting that is believable, that we've been in, as opposed to, you know, a CIA movie, Zero Dark Thirty, and it's like, oh my God, just the first 5 minutes, you know, they're running after airplanes on the tarmac and all this kind of stuff. It's just one bizarre, just ridiculous. You know, you're just sitting there in the movie theater thinking, like, I don't believe what I'm watching. So how can I be expected to believe anything about the characters?
Right.
It's very, very difficult. Let's just go through quickly. Can we open up a box? Can you give a box of that stuff to Jack there and have Jack pile? One of the good things about this podcast is that we already have friends. So people have been very anxious for us to do well. Jack has already handed one to the pirate. What do you got there?
Deliverance. Corridors of blood.
Deliverance what?
Corridors of blood.
Okay, so this is some... we can only, what kind of permutation of the actual deliverance could this possibly... Yeah.
You look just like a hog.
Was that a line in Deliverance?
Yeah.
Now, I love Deliverance because they took a sex star and killed them in the first 10 minutes. Burt Reynolds, you know, disabled them and made them, you know, go down in a raft, you know.
Was this an 80s movie?
70s.
Deliverance?
I've never heard of it. You saw Deliverance? No. Oh, my God. Deliverance.
Super Beast sounds like a good one.
Which one?
Super Beast.
Super Beast. Okay.
Sexy Beast. No, that was a good
Sexy
movie.
Beast was a great movie. And why is Sexy Beast in the news again?
Is it?
Yes, this is a movie we should talk about. Under the Skin.
Oh,
did
that's
you
a good
see
one.
No,
skin?
I still haven't seen
did
it.
Did you see it?
I liked it a lot.
You liked that same guy that made Sexy Beast. Made Under the Skin, yeah. Jonathan Glazer.
Yeah, yeah, he's good.
These are two movies that I could say that they're what this podcast is all about. Sexy Beast stars Ben Kingsley, the actor that played Gandhi. So that was as bad for anybody's career as if you played the Dalai Lama. Okay, so Ben Kingsley's a good guy. Wouldn't you say that your reaction to Ben Kingsley is, he's a nice guy, he's a good guy, you've never seen him do anything rancid or terrible, have you?
No.
He's been in some bad movies, but you wouldn't hold that against him. He's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Your neutral feelings about in Sexy Beast, the swearing that he does for the first 20 minutes in this scene from the minor mafia in the south of Spain is, you cannot stop laughing. It is amazing. He is amazing.
Like what? Like a London gangster?
Yes, yeah, he's a London gangster transplanted to Spain, London. And yes. Everything's bothering him. It's just, you know, and he's had this affair with this woman that he can't quite get out of his head. And the reason he can't quite get her out of his head is that during sex, she had fondled his anus. And he was outraged by it. But as the movie goes along, turns out, he was like, you know, the classic British line, who would do such a thing? And then by the end of the movie, it's like, who would, you know, it's with pleasure that he recounts this moment that this happens, and all he can think is of being with this woman again. The movie's fantastic. Danny Huston's in it. He's great. Or Ray Winstone's in it. Maybe it's not Danny Huston. It's a great movie by Jonathan Glazer. So Jonathan Glazer waits 8 or 9 years, and he makes even more. He makes this movie, Under the Skin. And Under the Skin is Scarlett Johansson, The movie came out at the same time that Lucy came out. Hollywood blockbuster with, you know, $50 million of the cost of making the movie. Under the Skin is about an alien who comes to Scotland, played by Scarlett Johansson, and needs to eat human beings. So they stick Scarlett Johansson in a van and put 14 cameras in the van. And she went around and actually picked up strangers while they were following and monitoring the van, and then tried to convince these guys to have sex with her, depending on where they were going. And if they were going to meet a female, a mother, a wife, a sister, or a daughter, she would kick them out of the van. She'd slow down and stop and say, okay, out you get. But if they were just sort of at loose ends, then she would take them somewhere to have sex with them. And these guys were buying into this, like, completely. You could see they were very surprised. They're just sort of sitting there like, okay, you know, if you say so, no problem. And all of this is done with a Scottish accent. None of these guys thought that she was a foreigner or anything. So we're talking about a tour de force acting performance, the best in Scarlett Johansson's life. So the reason I bring up the connection between the two things from Jonathan Glazer is that Sexy Beast, when I tell you that Ben Kingsley is howlingly funny, swearing in a movie, that's an easy claim to make. You have a character that's, he's Spanish mafia, the mafia, the British mafia in Spain. I grew up with those people. There is no funnier subsect of people on earth. They're the biggest clowns that ever lived. So all of it is very believable, but he steals scene after scene after scene for the first 30 minutes. You cannot believe that this movie keeps this sort of energy up. Well, the reason the movie keeps the energy up, the reason Ben Kingsley is so good, is because of Jonathan Glazer, the filmmaker. So Jonathan Glazer had this vision to make this movie. Ben Kingsley bought into it, and he, after coming out of Gandhi, said, okay, I'll play this like low-life guy. And in Under the Skin, Scarlett Johansson, for whatever reason, and she's nude. There's all these nude scenes. She's examining her body, and at some point she's sort of looking at her vagina, like not knowing what it's like to be a human being. And this movie literally went under the radar, never mind Under the Skin. I mean, it just flew under the radar, and people just, very few people that I know have seen this movie. And it really is about an alien looking at our everyday life in Scotland, of all places. And, you know, having this very, it's very much like The Man Who Fell to Earth with David Bowie, except much more believable and much visually, much richer movie. So it needed that, the auteur needed Glazer, Jonathan Glazer, to put those two movies together.
So there's no special effects in this movie. It's all just real. I mean, that's, the main character is an alien, but it's shot all just in, like, if it
there
were
there are special effects, okay. And the special effects, to tell you the truth, are not believable. They occur at the end of the movie. There's some other special effects.
Where she's like, looks like she's like going under.
Yes, that stuff was very believable. That was very cool. That was very well done. But the actual, when we see the alien, it's embarrassing. It's sort of the blob from the swamp kind of thing. And what's curious about that, and I may have mentioned this before in talking about that movie to you, even though the special effects are cheesy, you care so much about the character that you completely believe that the alien has got a problem at the end of the movie, and you want to know how it's resolved. So you don't sit there going like, oh, this looks like, you know, is she wearing jello or aluminum foil with, like, you know, graffiti?
So the alien is humanized.
Completely. Mm-hmm. And her character, because she betrays her alien race to be more human, we identify with her even more. Tremendous movie. So we've talked about Cold War. Are you excited to see Cold War?
Well, yeah. I've heard the reviews. And you're going. You're giving me the eye.
Yeah, it's good.
And we both like Cold War. You liked the.
If you
the
tend
story.
To be on the snotty side, you like it. And I can like the movies for the masses. You know, for the asses. I can appreciate movies, but this one's nice.
And we talked about All Is Lost with Robert Redford. And you, I give it a thumbs down. You give it a thumbs down. You haven't seen it. I
haven't seen it.
Yeah, so you're not going to bother.
Is this Robert Redford back in the day or pulled?
No, this is a death door pulled back. Plasticated.
There you go. Leathery.
Yeah. Under the Skin and The Whale Rider are, I think you'd agree that Whale Rider is worth seeing, even at the remove of plenty of time.
Although I would do Robert Redford for $1 million, like in that movie with Demi Moore. What's that
with
movie?
Who?
Demi Moore. There was a movie with Robert Redford.
Where he tries to buy the
wife
of
for
Woody Harrelson's wife.
Yeah.
What
I'd
is
do
that?
Him for $1 million.
What movie is that?
I forgot what it's called. Some stupid
He's
movie.
Made a lot of bad movies.
Yeah, why would he do that?
He's just being a movie star.
He just wants to look at himself.
They're all in debt. No?
Yeah. You'd think with Sundance, he'd... Well, maybe he doesn't make any money off of that. I don't know.
Oh, I think he makes a lot of money. What other movies did we talk about? Master and Commander you liked. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the homoerotic aspect of that movie. You liked the fact that the boat stuff was real.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also mentioned the Latvian movie Raya that I saw recently. So we'll come back in part three with some recommendations from our panelists here of what movies to check out. You have some written down there, Pirate?
Yeah, I do.
All right, good, good, good. We'll come back. In this. Do you know, you keep on mentioning snobby. Is that what you're saying, snobby?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're
pretentious.
Oh, no, you're saying snotty.
Snotty, yeah.
Snotty, yeah, snobby. Okay. And I'm snobby. Saying snobby. Do you know where the phrase posh, do you know what posh means?
Oh, yeah, but what I don't know where it comes from.
What does posh mean?
You know, like an upper-class twit.
When she drinks enough, she gets a very interesting English accent. Which
posh.
Is sort of,
must
be
she comes out.
Posh
she comes out.
Cold War.
Yeah, so, do you know posh. Where posh comes from?
I don't know.
Posh. Jack, do you know where posh comes from? Posh comes from...
One of the Spice Girls.
If you want to be my lover, with my friends, friendship never ends.
Yep.
And posh comes from the people that went as part of the colonial extraction from India, went from London to India, and they would insist on the boats going to India that they be on the left-hand side of the boat out of the sun on the way to India
on
the starboard
side.
It actually stands for port out and starboard home. Posh.
Wow.
It means you had some money and you could stay out of the sun and wouldn't get blistered and you wouldn't be sweating.
No, but like all those brown people.
Well, and like there were no showers. Even today, even in our...
God,
in our
I know someone
you go to Britain
that.
Today... British people still don't like to take showers. They don't like to take baths. It just drives me crazy. Like, one time I was in the Serengeti, and I was like, we haven't had it. No one's been clean for, like, 6 days. And look, it's raining. And so I took all my clothes off, and I went out, and, like, I took a shower in the rain, the Serengeti, with rhinos and everything like that. And I came back and said to these guys, hey, you should go out there and take a shower. And they're like, no, thank you. We're British. Okay, we're coming back for part three.